So,
things are, I don't want to jinx, no Kinaharas. Things are a little better, calmer today, let's just say.
I guess that's the nature of the beast of home care
Yes.
administration. So, Marissa, you can take it away. I want to thank you so much. I want to thank Marissa so much for, I'll let you finish chewing, for chairing this group.
I appreciate the opportunity. And, I was thinking about it's anything pre-COVID is totally a blur because I know that for months we were meeting and I would try to come up with interesting topics for us to share where we really could, gain knowledge, information, share with each other. And then as soon as COVID hit, that really our main concern and everything relating to that. So I hope that you've all, that it's you're happy discussing what we've been discussing and that this is meeting your needs. And I see you keep coming back and I really appreciate that. I'm happy about that. The original goal was just, again, I felt alone. I felt like really totally alone in this when I would try to engage with questions with private home care agencies. It would always be very different than a JFS situation. And so I hope that this has given people a sense of being part of something larger than what you are alone, and that we can continue to keep this group going, reach out to one another, and hopefully get past this pandemic and have it be something we can say, remember when. So we can keep focusing on the growth that we had been talking about earlier and the technology and our client service agreements and all the, other interesting things. And one topic I remember recently, someone was mentioning trying to come up with packages in their service agreements to bundle case management, like private pay, geriatric case management with home care. And, that is something I would love to, when and if we ever get past just trying to deal with the immediate emergency, I would love to go back and revisit the that opportunity, because I know it's something actually that we are working toward at JFS at home, and that's of interest to me. I can only, I tell you what I'm interested in. But when you think of topics and things that are interesting to you or questions you have, please share them with me, share them with Lisa. And at the end of this meeting today, we'll make some announcements about going forward for the group.
Terrific.
And today, again, we're just kind of having an open forum for anybody who wants to suggest something or ask a question, or we can just go around. I mean, I know most times Lisa says, let's go around and just do a check-in. So I think we can start that way.
Yeah, we can start that way. I just wanted to say, I think it was, if I'm right, I could be wrong, Ardella, maybe she was the one from JESA who talked about what it is that you were talking about just recently with the bundling of the pack.
Well, there was a gentleman on the call that
what?
Day.
What?
There was a gentleman, a man.
Right.
On our-
he, well, that's, that was Todd,
thank
who
you.
Is JESA's CEO. Right. So
okay.
He was the one
that's
who was talking
right.
about it. So Ardella's here to represent that community. But yeah, let's do a check-in and then we can get back to that if you want.
Okay. So I'm going to try to see if I can look at everybody that's here. And we had started talking to Debbie. So Debbie, if you want to.
I was typing in the chat actually, because I would also love to have conversations about bundling case management. It is something that exists in our, also in our Jewish Family Service, but they've never really found a good home for it. And I'm finding more and more clients and families really need it now. I don't know about everybody else, but I think here in Cincinnati, we have horrible increase in cases, but what I'm seeing a lot of is so many families who really should be in facilities, either a husband and wife or just one person, really is ready for a facility and really needs 12 to 24 hours of care, but no one wants to go to a facility in COVID because they don't want to take the risks that are involved. And while I'm happy to have them as clients, there's really only so much sometimes we can do for them. And that's, you know, that's kind of my frustration. And if they had a care manager who was at the same time helping them navigate COVID and the facilities and virtual tours and conversations, I know that would be beneficial to me. So I imagine it would be to everybody else. I'm in better shape than I was last time. like I said, I don't want to jinx anything. No Kinahara's here. But, you know, we're navigating this new normal. We still look into purchasing testing, though we've got enough free testing in the community that I haven't had to do that yet. And we're really just, I purchase PPE, we do all the things we have to do. And so we've really been, I think, you know, fortunate that our staff is doing what they're supposed to do and our clients are abiding by what we're asking them to do. And we've had a pretty good rate so far, but we're just one case away from a crisis. So that's kind of how we function on a daily basis. Hiring is virtually impossible at a time of year when it used to be relatively easy because people wanted to pick up a second or third job to augment their holiday spending. We are not finding those folks. They don't want to work, or they don't need to work. They're making more in unemployment. They don't want to take the risk, whatever it is. We used to have people who are saying, you know, I'll pick up a third job so I can buy more stuff for my kids for Christmas. Not having that experience. I don't know what the rest of you are seeing, but we are definitely struggling and talking to our JVS Career Services. They're seeing that across the board in the hiring they do for daycare and all that kind of thing. So that's our struggle.
That's a problem. You know, people can't find nurses, people can't find teachers, and people can't find, you know, home healthcare, you know, helpers. It's a problem.
We are hiring, but everybody wants to just work night shifts. And the shifts that used to be relatively easy to staff, like we're not even talking 4-hour 9-to-1. I'm talking 9-to-5. Everyone's availability has changed in a dramatic way for one reason or another. Either their children are home and they need to be supervised, or they're caring for someone in their family, or maybe there's the unemployment piece that we don't really know what's happening. I know that the supplemental $600 a week that was happening in Florida ended, so I can't imagine that they're really collecting, because in order to collect, the agencies that they've worked for have to like document back when they get applications for unemployment that they were like let go. And we never do, because if they're on our roster, we're offering them work. So it's really, I don't know what's going on. We just know it's related to COVID somehow. Yeah, it's tough, very tough.
Isn't everything these days? Yeah.
Well, if I can say, we have here in Vancouver, Canada, we have government programs that are offering that are paying people to train on the job at a much higher rate than we've typically paid for just regular household help hours.
Wow.
And so that doesn't help. And then same thing, I'm just forming an email today to our program manager to explain all the details of everything we've done to try and hire. And some of the patterns that I'm seeing right now are that we may look at a candidate or interview a candidate, but then they back off immediately. And I'm thinking it's just, there's so many jobs available. We are a social service agency. We don't pay as much as other organizations or other companies, private companies or government. So we just can't compete. And it's trying to figure out the details of all those individuals, why they're not working for us, and see if we can creatively find ways of finding those people who might work for us, who could work for us. Mm-hmm. Very challenging.
It is.
I would agree with that. Yeah. We're going around, just going. I had to take the meeting on my phone, so I have to keep swiping to see everyone. So Tatiana, do you want to give us an update?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm listening to other people, and I kind of feel sorry that we don't experience that level of emergency. I'm not sure if it's only if it's for Canada-wide, or it's for Edmonton, Alberta. I'm not sure how Vancouver feels about the emergency state in terms of COVID. I mean, we do apply our kind of contagious disease protocol. We have been doing it since March when the pandemic started, and just increased the level of precautions and protection measures in place. But we haven't seen many changes in terms of the kind of the services that we provide. We did have some withdrawal of the services in the beginning, but then people came back. So it kind of came back to normal in terms of level of home care services that we provide. And we actually, we trying to grow because we were working, we got a grant to expand our private home care services a few months ago. And we doing a feasibility study, trying to evaluate if it's possible to increase the private clientele for us. And this is where we're working on marketing and different strategies, etc. So it's kind of, we operating in a, on a kind of normal, in a normal mode with just more precautions. We had only one case, thanks God, we had one case, COVID positive worker, and it didn't spread anywhere, so I was very well contained. So that's that was fine. And coming back to that conversation about bundling case management with home care, we have been doing it as well for at least a year now, trying to expand our services to larger communities. And this is how we market. One of the marketing strategies for us, it is bundling case management with the home care. So I totally agree with whoever thinks that would be an important strategic way to
Curiosity, how are you billing for that? Who are you using for your case management?
I think she froze.
She froze. Yeah, me too. Okay, I'll let her know and we'll get back to her. Okay, who is next?
Okay, let's see on my little roster here. Okay, I see Ardell.
Hi, okay. I guess I'm with Premier Home Care, just to remind, because I just joined last month. Cindy Libby Green used to pop in.
Right.
For that, kind of represented Premier as well as Jessa. Curiosity to see what meeting Todd popped in for you guys. What was that?
Oh, he was the one, I guess, who was speaking about bundling case management.
So he came in as a speaker, or he just joined?
Oh, no, he came in because Cindy wasn't there, and you weren't there, I guess, at that time, and he wanted to be part of the conversation. Okay. So he was just talking about what Jessa is doing, and it was interesting.
Jessa has a what they call senior services program, and that has, you know, our HSP program is, it sits in that department. So the Holocaust Survivor Program sits in that one. So within that, they have, of course, some social workers, but they also have people that just do case management. More so for the HSP clients, but also for people too. So we're really looking to, you know, how to expand that and put it together with Premier. I'm curious what Tatiana says about who actually does their case management. And we've had nurses do it, but it can be, depending on the client, it can be quite cumbersome, you know, what they need. You know, you're kind of like a geriatric case manager is what they really need.
That's what ours has in Boca, and basically they have a program called CareLink, and it was mentioned before that, you know, the program exists, and it's not before we had the home health agency. They accepted that was natural. CareLink was part of JFS. It's just that as they want to really be able to reach the number of people that we know need the service, and for some reason it's not growing at the rate that they would want it to. Where does it really belong? And it does seem a really natural continuum to have that type of service housed in a home health agency setting. Since we have so much contact with so many people, just from doing intake assessments, you're naturally speaking to people who need services, and the opportunities are there more than just being in a social services organization waiting for people to call you specifically about case management. So, right.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
So we would contract, if we didn't take over the program entirely, we would, and we have already contracted with one of their geriatric case managers. And so it's kind of like a side-by-side service, not meant to be in competition. For us, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, we donate a lot of our excess revenue back to JFS. This doesn't matter, really, at the end of the day, where the revenue is coming into. You just want to get your share of it from the community and be able to give them the high-quality service we know we can. Right. But rates are an issue. There's competition for this service, and depending on how and who are providing the service, there can be a real range in cost to people. Ooh, I lost the...
We can still hear you. We just okay. Lost the video.
Okay.
Yeah, we can hear you. We lost you completely. Okay. So yeah.
Curious if anybody was doing, you know, when you pop, you know, whether a client that you're serving, not comes on COVID positive, but, you know, serving, already caring for, and then well as, you know, if a caregiver pops that's seeing a client, are you guys doing any type of like tracking internally, you know, kind of have a process in place, or is it just by the seat of your pants, so to speak?
What was the question?
Just to see if people were, what their processes were when, you know, a caregiver popped positive, you know, where you kind of have a process in place that, you know, you call the client, you know, notify anybody else that has to be part of their care team.
You know, does anyone hear that? Does anyone?
Well, we have our government does contact tracing for us. So it just takes that off our shoulders, which is fantastic because I was very worried about that. Plus we have this whole confidentiality thing now that we can't reveal the person who has COVID. So you have to, like a client, you have to say to a client, you have been exposed, not you. I mean, I don't say it. Vancouver Coastal Health says it. You have been exposed to someone who has COVID in the last 24 hours. And they do the contact tracing for us.
Canada's really got it made in the shade, it sounds like.
Wow. Yeah, it just depends on the community you're in.
We all want to move to Canada.
Well, come really on do. Down.
Come on up.
Someone from this group reached out after the last meeting, I can't remember, from Montreal, and she said, you know, I'm thinking of you. You guys were so kind after the last meeting when I was really struggling. And I said, this was before the American election. I said, just save a job for me. So if we all in Canada, that I can have a job in home care in Canada. And
for sure.
Yeah. But we do our own contact tracing, say that 10 times fast, because so we have, I think I've talked about this before, separated out our caregivers. We have caregivers who only work in facilities and then caregivers who only work in private homes. We've divided them out to decrease that cross-contamination because the facility numbers are so much higher. And then we had made a decision to anybody who was in contact, we pull them off the schedule so that they can get tested. We pay them to go their hourly rate to go get tested. And then we pay them up to, because the government company, the government doesn't pay them unless they are tested COVID, but we make them take two shifts off to get tested and get results. And we made the budget decision to pay them for 2 days of work out, not using their PTO and not using the government funds, because we just felt it was a better business decision to safely save our, because keeping our workforce is so important to us, right? Retention in this day and age is so hard. So we're paying people at least two shifts worth of pay to go get tested and take the time off so we can get results, because also here results were taking a long time. And so, that's kind of how we do it. And we let the family know, someone who was in your parents' home tested positive. Here's what we're doing about it. And we don't let anybody come back until, you know, they've met certain requirements also.
I love that idea. We didn't do that. I mean, we luckily it was only one or two incidents that we had to actually go through the whole process of tracing. And we have official forms and documents, you know, that would be sent to the appropriate parties. And of course, phone calls made, HR handles it. But if somebody was to test positive, like if the caregiver, let's say, tested positive, then we would be the ones to call the family. We wouldn't name the caregiver, but they would figure it out.
Yeah.
So most of the time, we had two or three cases. The caregiver told the family before we could even call them. They told them.
Yeah.
And because they had a close relationship or whatever. Or when they called out to say that they weren't coming in or something, they were honest and told them why. We had a caregiver who got her positive test result while she was at their house.
Mm.
And she had to leave, and she said why she was leaving, you know, whatever. But yeah, we have our protocol. I'm sure a lot of us have that in common. If you're not living in a place where government is taking over that process for you, you know, we have our protocols, which is, you know, a negative test or two negative tests. It all depends. But I will say it's been challenging and confusing because of the CDC's recommendations changing so often to the point where we know 14 days was changed to 10. 10 at one point got changed to 7.
Yeah.
And then full out, not even recommending testing at all. Just watch the symptoms. And if enough time has passed without them, you're good to go. So, wow.
Well, but they say because the antibody, you know, it depending on the type of test that you're doing, that it sticks right around. So, you know, retesting them is going to pop positive. But yeah, we go by the 10 days. 10 days can't work, you know, to come back, needless to say, you got to be symptom free, and then no fever for the last 72 hours without right any meds. And so that's
a good policy that we would all want to adopt. It's not the CDC guideline. The CDC right guidelines for hours now.
Wait, so what the CDC guideline is, what did you just say?
24 hours without
24
fever
hours instead of 72.
Yeah. But, you know, anyway, the point is, as providers of home care and community-minded individuals, this is not only about minimizing our liability. We care about people. So it's not about doing the minimum. It's about doing everything you can as if these were your parents and your siblings that are the caregivers, for example, and not wanting anyone to take an unnecessary risk. So you just do the best you can. I don't like to overreact and go crazy, but I don't like the CDC standard. I think it's kind of too basic for our industry.
Right, but you know, Marissa, you're in charge, right? So,
right,
you know,
right,
the buck stops here, or, you know, and right, you have right to so, make yeah the decisions and set the precedent, as many of right you do. And right, it's a lot of responsibility. You know, it's really a tough position to be in.
Right. You know, Marissa's right to just keep up with the ever-changing. Fortunately, Justice, you know, was fortunate to split their COO position that was vacant into two slots. And so they added a CMO, you know, Chief Medical Officer, and kind of split who oversaw what departments. So, of course, the Chief Medical Officer has us, hospice, and then senior services.
Mm-hmm.
So we're lucky to have that, you know. Of course, she's a physician, so
right,
that you is are really, yeah, has stepped it up versus, you know, the COO has been more of a numbers person kind of thing, you know, in the operations past. So having the CMO is been, and she came aboard into March. Welcome aboard.
Right. Marissa, before we went on, maybe Tatiana just wanted to finish up because people had asked her a question about something you froze.
Right. Yeah.
And someone asked if you could share your bill in charge for that.
How you're bundling the
case management. Yeah. And then who did it?
So we have a program, a department that is called SMART, Seniors Making Age-Related Transition. So we have one outreach worker / case manager there. So we don't have that many private clients yet, but she is the one that the person from that program, she partners with the home support department, and every time we have a request for from a new client, she's the one who assesses the needs and comes up with a plan, with a home support plan, together with the home support department. But as long as this client is a client of the home support services, she is the one who is providing with any other support, any other types of support, like filling in documents, advocating, facilitating different meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a lot of, so she would do the same thing for any client, and she would be paid, despite, like, I mean, if we had private clients or not had them, it's just, that's her permanent position as an outreach, seniors outreach / case manager. So right now, because we don't have that many private clients, she is still able to do that case management piece. And we do not increase the rate, the fee that we ask for our services at this point.
So it's just bundling your per hour home care fee?
Yeah.
And do you use an RN or you just use social worker or just?
She happened to be a nurse. She hasn't worked as a nurse for years and years.
So no license.
Yeah, she doesn't have a license, okay. But that would, I mean, ideally, definitely that would be a social worker, and we, right now, at this point, we are standardizing the case management across all the programs in, at the JFS, so we want to, whatever the case management we're doing with the Holocaust survivors, that would be probably the ideal case management example that we want to expand to any program within Jewish Family Services, including seniors and younger adults or children. So right now we are standardizing, trying to find out the intake process that would work for any case manager, forms that we can use for completing assessment, a process that would work for any program, including intake, assessment, creating care plan, doing follow-ups and closing the file if it's necessary. Sometimes it's an ongoing client. So we really want to come to kind of a case management model that would work for any program with some flexibility for sure, depending on the clientele we work with.
Great, thank you.
Elaine, you're muted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In your home support program, Tatiana, your clients are Holocaust survivors. So your rate.
Yeah.
Your rates are high enough to be able to pay that case manager from the SMART fund?
No. For the Holocaust survivors, it's me who is the case manager.
Oh, so she's just for private.
Yes. But again, she's the case manager also for the clients who don't have home care services at all. We have those clients as well. Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that just need case management. They're not ready for the home support part actually aids in their home. Yeah.
Yeah. And it could be short-term case management, when it's like a simple issue that might be resolved within a few weeks.
Is that from donations or federation or who funds
both.
That?
Yes, both federation and donations. Okay. Yeah, that's one of the programs that it's kind of underfunded, I would say. So we always struggle to find funds. Okay. Yeah, so we have to be very cautious kind of in the future to make sure we have enough funds to cover this position. But it's much needed, absolutely.
So you're not charging for case management?
No, it's really, we do sell our home support services as a package that includes home support and case management. This is how we try to distinguish. We have other kind of things that we sell as something that distinguish us from other organizations, but the case management is one of them for sure.
So you're talking about targeting private pay clients, mm-hmm. charging rate for both.
Yeah.
Do you think in dollars it would translate into per hour when you're including case management?
So right now, I mean, we are at the deficit because we don't have that many clients. We really, let's say if we have 10 private clients, that's maximum at this point. So it might, we calculated everything, like all the expenses, including the case management. It's not profitable at all. We are at the deficit. I think we are at 40 something Canadian dollars an hour. So our goal right now to be at least to get it down to $30 an hour, because that's the rate that our provincial Alberta Health Services is ready to pay to contract out their services. And we, one of the official contractors, we were able to change our liability, et cetera, insurance, and we are able to take those contracts from the provincial home care. But they can pay only $30.80, something an hour. So this is where we want to be, at least make it even.
How can you afford to provide both those services? Oh, you're saying by seeking out grants or funding and to cover the cost. Yeah.
And we, more clients we generate, sort of potentially it's definitely will be feasible. Right now we are at a deficit and we're trying to figure out how we can expand quickly that it would, at least we would break even.
Got it. Okay. Let me go back and see where we were. So Ardella, you completed your update, yeah?
Yeah, you know, I agree with Debbie, you know, the struggling to hire, you know, it seems like it's a dried up well, and, you know, the more COVID pops in the region, you know, Maryland region is, you know, one step away from popping into, you know, stay at home again, you know, we're back to phase one. You know, especially in Montgomery County type of thing, you know, right out of sight of DC. But, you know, just plugging along, and we don't have the ability to accept known COVID positive clients. Our hospice does, but, you know, our caregivers, even ones that work at facilities you know, they have no interest in knowingly walking in. They don't seem to freak too bad if a client happens to pop positive. We've only had not even a handful of that, thank goodness. I shouldn't just say only, you know, let's knock on some wood there. But yeah, you know, the same struggles. Montgomery County, Maryland's great for the free COVID testing. I happen to live across the river in Virginia. And if you look at that, you know, for free testing sites that are just kind of open and ongoing, not just kind of pop up, you know, for a couple of days or whatever in Virginia. Whereas Maryland, Montgomery County is a lot better. And, you know, for the free testing part of it, you know, it's PCR, it's not the rapid, and it, you know, they tell you 48, but it becomes more 72, and it'll probably get longer now that the demand is popping up. The struggles around the board there. You know, we're really lucky on the PPE front that our CMO, she uses some Jewish connection group. I have no idea who it is, but some guy in New Jersey, and the guy's a master whiz about finding things. So which is really good, because between supplying all the hospice nurses, social workers, et cetera, that need to visit the clients, as well as, you know, Premier's aides that go out in nursing, you know, we're really lucky to be able to keep them in full PPE, you know, face shield, N95, you know, gown, which is more like an apron these days. Those are kind of funky, but still, it's something. That's it for me.
Thanks. Okay, I have to put my glasses back on because without seeing it, I'm in motion. Jillian, you already spoke. So, Israela?
Hey, how you guys doing? Let's see, what's doing here? Just to remind you, we are a little different than some of you. We are a registry of private duty aides. The aides don't work for us. So unfortunately, that means we really keep a very hands-off approach with the aides. Once we've made a match. We do not supply the aides with any PPE, right or wrong. It's not something that we do.
Who does?
Well, the grocery stores, as far as I'm aware, they sell it all there. The aides get their own. The families give it to them. We do not. Our grocery stores are pretty supplied with masks and gloves and sanitary, sanitizer. So, no, we don't. We don't service any families that have COVID. We were asked, we get a call, a referral, and we say, nope, sorry. Our biggest challenge is that we serve people in facilities as well as the homes. And we have, which used to be a peach of a job, you go into a facility, it's an easy job. We can't fill it. The facilities are requiring COVID tests, and rightly so. The aides don't want to have their brains tested every once a week. They complain it's uncomfortable, and we're having trouble filling a job in the facilities. That's a big challenge. And so we're going along. We're doing intakes over the phone. We're still taking intakes. The aides are doing their job. They need a job. One of the pieces to become part of our registry, a challenge for us, is that we would have a training class. We haven't been able to do our last two training classes. Our spring session was immediately canceled. It was supposed to start in March, immediately done. Yes. We were supposed to have another one in October, didn't even attempt it. Now at this point, knowing that we're going into winter with continued COVID and most people not being able to get a vaccine maybe till summer, we're going to try and put our training session on Zoom, and that we haven't done it yet, but we're trying. It's a little technologically challenging. Our aides, their first language is not necessarily English. I don't think that looking at me, this way is one thing, but to be staring at me over a phone for 3 hours, I don't think I'm that enjoyable. So it's definitely a challenge, but thank God on one hand that we have had.
I'm sorry, wait, Marissa, what?
Think about the kids that are doing virtual school online, yeah, right? And they're exactly 5 hours a day with your teacher, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but thank goodness we had a large posse of aides who were always looking for jobs. Over 300 aides, and if only 100 of them had jobs, we have 200 people who are waiting for jobs. So doing an intake with a family over the phone, though challenging, and I have to trust them, that what they're telling me about themselves is real. Obviously, when an aide goes in and it's not as it is seems, we'll know soon enough. But we're doing everything this way, and the aides are still stepping up and doing their work. We have had nobody come in as an aide or go out with thank God, really. Though I don't know that that's going to continue this way. It's November. We've got December, January, February. I think it's going to be a tough winter. And we, as you see, I'm still here, in the office. We're doing our thing, and we'll see how long that keeps up. That's it, really. Everything's the same.
Thank you. Tammy, is Tammy able to, somebody said that they couldn't hear, couldn't speak, but could hear.
No, she can talk, I think. There she is.
Okay, I'm unmuted. Sorry, guys. A little challenging today for me with technology for some reason. We did also have one staff member that actually tested positive through all of this with COVID. We kept her out for 2 weeks, and like Marissa was saying, we actually mailed a letter to the homes and just stating that we had a staff member that did test positive. She is currently out of work, or the person is currently out of work, and will return after the 14 days. And again, I'm sure the clients knew because they only have her as a caregiver. Most of those clients that she actually services are Spanish speaking because she's my one and only Spanish speaking staff member that I have.
Where are you, Tammy?
We're in actually located in Clearwater, Florida.
Oh, your Gulf Coast?
It's where our corporate office. Yeah, Gulf Coast.
Okay, great.
But yeah, it's I did just recently hire two staff members, two full-time people that have both, I was able to get on board and get all their training and stuff done in person with them. And they've both are successfully working out in the field again. But when I posted the jobs, it was very slim picking. One of them actually is a friend of mine that I was able to bring in, and another one was a Russian speaking homemaker that my director knew of. So both of them are out trained and in the field working now. We just make sure and provide them all with masks and gloves and tell them to stay safe, you know, hand sanitizer and be careful. So knock on wood, we've been very fortunate through it.
Thank you. I think there's one other, the 727 that we talked about.
That's Tammy.
I mean, that is, oh, she's on both,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think has everyone
Yeah,
shared?
I think everyone's gone. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I wanted to say with regards to a feasibility study for the opportunity to, you know, what the market holds in terms of potential clients and stuff. We don't do a lot of marketing. We're in our fourth year of operations. And I will say, okay, so to qualify our situation, Boca Raton has, I would say, on average, a higher income, income level. And so the affordability and also the presence of clients that have long-term insurance policies is maybe more concentrated in our area. And of course, also we live in a really, I think, number one or number two density of seniors in the nation. So all of that being said, up until this year, we really hardly did any real marketing or advertising. Everything's been word of mouth. So I just want to let you know that like every single person who calls, we ask them how they heard of us, and it was all word of mouth. And so sometimes it's just a matter of getting it up and going, because then clients will refer clients, caregivers will refer caregivers, caregivers will refer clients, and it takes on, you know, it gets momentum.
As long as you're doing a good job.
like I said, I qualified it because we're in a place with high demand and the good ability to afford the service that they need. Even though there's plenty of need for financial assistance, and also especially like Debbie mentioned, people that need round the clock care, it's very unaffordable,
right,
and unrealistic without the supplement of a long-term care insurance policy. And yet people really want to age in place. That's the term they want to, you know, home care agencies advertise very beautifully that we provide care anywhere that you call home, but we know from our seniors that they want their real home, the home that they've been living in for the past 20 years, to be the place they call home. And it's really not affordable on a long-term basis, except for the wealthy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I will, but anyway, my point was just about not really uncover the full picture of what's out there. You know, and how it's going to go. In other words, what I'm saying is be careful how much money you spend on marketing, and don't underestimate the word of mouth, and don't spend too much on marketing without first seeing how well you're doing without it.
Right. We didn't market, just maybe in the beginning, we did a little bit of marketing, but basically through our reputation, the hospitals, the health units, the community agencies, word of mouth, they refer to us. So we don't have to do any marketing at all. And the marketing that we did in the beginning was just to go to the health units and present our program.
Right.
What kind of health unit? I mean, Elaine, what do you mean by health unit?
We have community health units, depending on what area, like in Vancouver Coastal Health, it's all broken down into areas, and there's health units for each region.
Okay, that would be probably CPNs here in Alberta. Yeah, we word of mouth, it's, we just had a conversation a couple of days ago with the team that works on that feasibility study. And we thought that the word of mouth wouldn't really work in our case. It doesn't really, because we have a very small Jewish community in Edmonton. And most of our home support clients are Russian-speaking Holocaust survivors. So the word of mouth will be contained within that small population. So, non-Russian speaking Jewish seniors, they already know about services. So our goal is really going beyond a Jewish community and start marketing it really outside. We even have a conversation about branding the home support department separately from Jewish Family Services, because we might...
That's a great idea.
I mean, we don't need to do that because we accept non-Jewish clients, and probably the majority of our clients are non-Jewish. And what it is, you develop relationships with the hospitals, with the health units, and that you say, we accept everybody. We don't just accept Jewish people.
So did you reach out to them?
Initially, when we first started the program, we did.
Okay.
Half of the clients that we serve are not Jewish, and we get referrals. We actually even reach out to the churches for AIDS as well as families. You know, we're doing this. Please know, let your congregation know. And I don't think you need to change your name at all.
Okay, yeah, because we were thinking that might be one of the problems.
People actually feel reassured. We did a study through Fordham University. And they helped do a whole marketing plan, and that was one of the questions. And for whatever reason, the fact that there actually is the name Jewish in our title, that gave people comfort and reassurance to actually use us.
I agree with you.
This is probably the greatest source of disagreement between my CEO and myself.
Yeah.
He wants to spend all of our revenue on marketing, like... We had a digital ad campaign on Facebook and Instagram, and I've been able to show her in the last year that more than 90% of our referrals come from word of mouth or an article that we placed in the Jewish newspaper about our services or about a particular story. And she's floored every time. Like she thinks, sometimes I think she thinks I'm nuts. But I've been able to prove over the last year, we've spent all this money on digital marketing, on coupons, on all these ridiculous things that I didn't really want to spend our money on. And she's floored when I say, when people say, I saw the art, I've lived in the community 20 years, somebody knew me, they saw the article about me and a client that they knew, and they thought, oh, my mother's having an operation, I'll call Debbie. Like, you can't put a price on that. Seems egotistical, but it's really a very different...
It's extremely important. And Jillian is on here, and Jillian used to work in the West End in Vancouver, and she developed a really good relationship with the health unit in the West End. And because of her, they would refer to us. I mean, she's not doing that now, but because she did, I think the emphasis should be on formulating good relationships with your potential sources of referral. That is key.
Absolutely. Here in Fairfield County, all the towns, Greenwich, Lisa, you'll know, Stamford, Westport, each town has professional groups of social workers in the aging population. In Stamford, it's literally called PIES, Partners in Elderly Services. Westport, it's coordinating council, whatever it is. And a lot of it is competition for me, obviously, but a lot of it is the visiting nurse services, which we are not a visiting nurse service. So when they're done with the Medicare services and they have to start private paying for additional assistance and they can't afford the rates, once they see, oh, Medicare has been paying for it and now you want me to pay $30 an hour, they can't afford it. So I've developed a working relationship with basically my competition, so that when they can't afford the services directly from a visiting nurse service, we've been getting referrals from them. So a lot of it, as you're saying, Elaine, it's relationships that you develop over time and trust. And I'm not taking away customers. They're referring them to me. It's always like, oh, it's my client, but not in this case. We share, we're in the household at the same time. You know, they have the physical therapist. They see our aides working. Oh, you guys are great. Let me refer this other client to you. And it's worked out very, very nicely. We don't have to do too much marketing at all. We once did I want to refer to it as a dog and pony show, where we tried to get into the doctor's offices. You can't get into a doctor's office unless you give them breakfast or lunch. And who did that? So that really didn't work either. And so, but it's the relationships that you develop. And
agreed. Very well said. So Marissa, hold on, Elaine. Wait, did you want to talk about Marissa being in that fabulous place? We're all freezing wherever we are, and she's like, walking around at the beach.
I'm walking to elementary school to pick my son up.
So she's got four kids, as you can imagine, and one's in college. I mean, it's amazing. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so listen, we have to end, and from now on, we're ending hopefully at 10 of, so that we can have a minute to go to the bathroom before our next Zoom call. That's my goal for 2021 and now. So I wanted to say two things, and what were they so important? Can you believe I don't remember?
Maybe the next meeting?
The next meeting, we don't know. I don't think we've come up with dates yet. So we're going to, do we want to meet every other month? That's a question. I want to ask, do we want to meet every other month? Do we want to meet every third month? Or what do you all think?
I personally think 3 months is too long.
Yeah, every other
month. So
I'm here. I'm part of your day. Whenever you want a meeting.
Okay. So, and people like this time, whatever time this is, 1 o'clock on Thursdays. Okay. So we'll come up with dates, Marissa and I, when we have a moment, we'll send them out to you.
Definitely early for Vancouver.
What time is it in Vancouver?
10.
That's not so bad. So I also wanted to say we're having our big annual conference, as you guys may or may not know, in April 19th to the 22nd. It's virtual. If you want to submit any sort of RFP about what you're doing, we would appreciate that. You want to submit to a program showcase, older adult services, we're having one for that. That could be something you'd be interested in. The RFP went out last week. It's in the newsletter tomorrow, so be on the lookout for it. And we're going to be sending out, Marissa, an end of the year survey for everyone so people can complete. We really want you to complete it because we want to know that this is meeting your needs. And if it's not, then what can we do differently? So, you know, be honest. We only want this to be better and better for you. This is a really great group in a way because it's small and it's consistent, right? You guys know each other over time, and that's really very nice as well. But you know, I want you to be honest and talk about everything that you have to say. And I guess that's everything, right?
Yes. I just really want to say thank you again, and I think it's so awesome that without a specific topic, we all share and have so much to say, and I think it's very valuable.
Yeah, it's valuable. And I want everyone hopefully to stay safe over this Thanksgiving. You know, it's filled with a lot of trepidation with everything that's going on. But we hope to see you in the new year. And happy holidays.
You will. Stay safe. Enjoy the holidays.
Yep.
Everybody.
Okay. You know where to reach us.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Marissa. Bye.